This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Seth, Evan said they're tolling with the idea of getting you into phenomenal shape for Green Hornet.
Yeah, we'll see. I've been informed of that. That'd be funny, huh?
You ready for that?
I guess so. I don't know. Do they still, like, have those things that they just, like, electronically work out for you as you lay there doing nothing?
Madonna has the new thing that's like a plate, and you just hold on to it.
Yeah, exactly. Are they, like, electronically stimulate your muscles into working out?
So you can play Halo while you do it.
Exactly. So I can be lazy and athletic at the same time.
You know what we have is an ab lounger.
Yeah.
Pass out in it. Work it
up. Yeah. Let's pay someone to exercise me.
The press kit says that you guys started working on this when you were 13. You said 14 when you were knocked up.
I'm a year older than Evan, actually. I realized. Well, not a year. I mean, I'm like 9 months older than he is. So when I say 14, he was 13. That's what I just pieced together. That I always say 14 and you say 13, but I realize it's because I'm like 9 months older than you. I probably was 14.
At what point did Knocked Up make it onto the poster for this movie? Was that prepared in anticipation of Knocked Up being a success, or on opening weekend?
Well, there was an original poster that didn't have Knocked Up on it, and then I think once Knocked Up did well enough to put it on,
it was under a panel. They had just it already. They just tugged the cord. It went clunk.
It used to be just the 40-year-old virgin or Talladega Nights or something like that. Yeah. I'm running out of permutations of that guy who brought you.
I know.
I just wanted to say heavyweights in one of them.
Yeah. What else can we squeeze in there?
Something right in heavyweights.
So, Seth, what did I think back home in Vancouver, the fact that you were really this movie that's finally got made? And I guess you had your friends sign releases and you used their names. It's not as dramatic as it sounds. Like, are you still friends with all these people?
Yeah, we're still friends with them. I think that was a good indication that we maintained good relationships with everyone we went to high school with is pretty much everyone signed their releases, and we knew all of them still.
For a few bastards.
A few bastards didn't. But they've known since high school that we were writing this movie. We told everyone.
All the names were the same.
All the names, yeah. We told people, hey, we used your name in our movie. It was really weird when we were finally, 10 years later, like, it's actually happening. But everyone seems psyched. Like, 30 of our friends are coming to the premiere from Vancouver. So, yeah. So that'll be fun.
This is in the notes that you thought Jonah was too old to play the part, or looked too old.
Yeah.
First, you weren't happy with it. Tell me what changed that.
Desperation. Casting desperation. Purely out of our own lack of imagination, probably. We just assumed he looked too old.
And he always has stubble on his
chest. He has stubble, and when you know him, it just is clear he's not 18. But then we saw a lot of guys who just weren't really doing what we wanted out of the role, and then we started thinking, maybe he doesn't look too old. And so we had since cast Michael Cera, who is actually 18, so we realized when you put them together, Jonah kind of does look younger. He doesn't look way older than Michael. And it actually works, but it was just really important to us that they actually looked like high school guys, and we probably were being overcautious with that, but we just really didn't want, like, 30-year Gabrielle Carteris.
That's a good reference.
That's a good reference, huh?
Was Pop part of the original script that you had when you were 14?
Yeah, they were. They were always
were
in there.
They were by far the worst part of the original script.
Yeah, that was and maybe the worst part of the final movie. Who knows? But, they were always in there. The idea was always, cops would always take our beer and shit when we were in high school. And thank you. And the joke, was always like, I bet they take our beer and they go drink it in the parking lot afterwards. And then we just kind of thought, like, what if they do? That'd be funny to watch.
How come we don't see anybody getting sick after they drink the one thing?
It's magical detergent.
The next morning, everyone's dead. That's the big reveal. It looks like a cult, cult gone wrong. Exactly. That's the hilarious reveal. Stay tuned till the end of the credits.
How much of the script is based on actual experiences?
The general plot is the same, and also it's a tidbit.
Actual experiences, though. Yeah, I mean, we tried to get liquor a lot. I mean, the period blood thing actually happened.
Like, we went to wild parties like that. We went to a couple parties of older people where we were terribly awkward and out of place.
And everyone started doing cocaine. That was...
Say?
No.
Well, I didn't have a problem with the drawing the dicks.
No, that was merely an excuse to have beautifully illustrated penis drawings in the movie. That's all that
we're
was.
We're connoisseurs.
Exactly. We knew, we just thought, I'd love to see a Tiananmen Square penis. How do we write that into the movie?
Who has that treasure chest of penis drawings?
Evan's brother drew every one of those. He's a lawyer.
Wait, what's his name?
David Goldberg.
You just ended his career.
He literally takes the bar in 7 days.
Yeah.
Say it again.
We want to release it. We might release a book of them, actually.
Yeah, we are working on it.
Coffee penis book.
I'm saying animated HBO series.
Exactly. Animated Disney series.
How much of a 13-year-old's script remains?
I mean, the general idea was always in there. Two guys, you know, trying to buy alcohol to impress girls.
Third guy goes off with the
third
cops.
Guy gets a fake ID with McLovin on it, goes off with the cops. I mean, that was always the same. The real evolution was the relationship between the guys. I think in our first draft, a lot of criticism we heard was that the characters were very much alike, Seth and Evan. And, I mean, we're kind of similar. It's not like we're totally different guys. So, we really had a hard time wrapping our heads around how do we make another guy? Slowly we kind of developed, you know, with a lot of help and advice from Judd, that's where that came from. We developed the relationship and kind of emotional story between the guys.
Seth, how has this summer changed things for you with Knocked Up and the already anticipation of this movie?
I mean, career-wise, it's made everything go much more smoothly, I would say, but my actual day-to-day life, you know, maybe four people ask to take pictures with me every day, that occupies maybe 2.5 minutes, so I don't consider that life-changing, really. It's 2-minute-changing. But, no, I mean, nothing's really changed. It hasn't affected my Halo score.
Can you talk about the day that you guys came up with the name for McLovin?
It was literally just sitting there, let's think of a funny name for his ID, McLovin, and we were like, this is very stupid, and it makes neither of us laugh.
We'll think of something better later.
And then we showed it to a bunch of people, and they were like, best part by far, McLovin, and we were just like, whatever floats your boat, and it floats everyone's boat, it seems, so.
Yeah, but that was always something that we thought, like, that's bullshit, no one would do that. We tried to keep it pretty real, but we were very aware that, like, okay, that's kind of pushing it a bit, but people seem to like it, so why not?
And I'll go to Judd because you've been very involved in the press conference. But you're involved, your hands are in a lot of projects. And I wanted to know if you could just give your fans an update as to what exactly is going on with the various things you're involved in.
Well, that's a good question. I wish I could remember. We're shooting right now. You Don't Mess with the Zohan. In New York. I just got back from New York.
I think I saw them shooting.
I visited and watched Adam Pretzel, a man. And that's kind of exciting. I wrote that with Adam and Robert Smigel. And it's hilarious. It's about a Mossad agent who is tired of the violence, so he goes AWOL and moves to America to follow his real dream of a life of peace and being a hairdresser in New York City. And it's hilarious. So, and it's very fun to work with Smigel, who's just the funniest man on earth. And so I'm excited to get that out there. But in Christmas time, we have Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, which stars John C. Reilly as Dewey Cox, and it's kind of a goof on Walk the Line and Ray. And
those clips are great at Comic Con.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it came out great. They wrote 33 songs for the movie. Jake Kasdan directed it. I wrote it with Jake. And Jack White has a cameo as Elvis, and Eddie Vedder inducts him into the Music Hall of Fame. And there's a lot of, like, weird cameos. The Beatles are played by Jack Black, Paul Rudd, Jason Schwartzman, and Justin Long. Nobody seems at all like any Beatles.
Rudd looks a lot like John Lennon in that, I have to say.
But it's a pretty remarkable performance by John C. Reilly because he is the guy that would get that part. So he's doing something ridiculous, but the acting is also fantastic. And he really cries, but over stupid things. It's very funny. And then Juba Taylor comes out in March, which Seth wrote with Chris Brown, and Owen Wilson stars in that, which is based on a John Hughes idea that he never wrote about some kids who get bullied and hire a guy they think is like a Navy SEAL, but really he's a homeless guy conning them, and he's supposed to protect them, and that came out great. That's all done.
The trailer's funny.
And then in the summer, Pineapple Express comes out next summer, you know, which we're almost done with. And Step Brothers, we start shooting in September.
I was going to ask
for. And Forgetting Sarah Marshall comes out like May 30th. That's also shot. So there's not much going on.
Exactly. If anyone has an idea.
I was going to ask about the test screening process, and I know you guys have been testing Walk Hard and Pineapple, and I wanted to know how involved you are in the test screening process and how that's been going.
I jump in deep in post on the projects, and we've been testing them. You know, they're going really well. We really pay attention if people like the movie or not.
Yeah.
These aren't movies that are like Seven and they're supposed to disturb you and they don't test well, but they're gigantic hits. You know, people should like these movies.
Yeah.
Before we screwed something up. I used to work for The Critic, and Al Jean and Mike Reiss from The Simpsons ran it, and James Brooks was around a lot, and he was obsessed with our table reads, and he really believed that the audience is your partner, and they tell you how you're doing, and that you don't think you don't be a snob about it. That if it's not communicating well, you have to figure it out. And so we've adopted that philosophy, and I think it works well.
Yeah.
Are you okay with the reviews that come out after like Pineapple Express gets a ton of reviews on the internet?
As
long as they're good, yeah.
You know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, sometimes. You know, it forces us to pay attention to something that's probably is a problem that someone calls out or a few people call out. You don't want to get a ton of bad buzz on the internet, especially when we try to finish these movies a long time before they come out, so we have time to market them or fix them if there's a problem. So it's scary. I mean, you know, you show a movie for the first time, and you're getting a lot of reviews now.
Yeah.
Every test.
It's true. Like, you know. I mean, like, when we showed Pineapple, we knew, like, there will be reviews of this on the internet.
There were four,
you know,
reviews of Pineapple on Ain't It Cool alone the day after the screening. But so far, it hasn't bit us in the ass. I'm sure as soon as it does, I'll be very angry about it.
You'll
outspoken
be,
against having those
be
people.
Cursing out Moriarty.
Are you
ever
worried that my movie's going to get ruined with too many spoilers being on there?
I kind of think people don't care.
Yeah.
It's not like, I remember when I was a kid, I saw Sharky's Machine. And, and you thought that Rachel Ward was dead, and then my friend Ron Garner turned to me and said, in the trailer, you see them make out, so that hasn't happened yet. But there's not that many people doing that much math. So I think it's okay. I try not to give away the ending, but everything else seems fair game.
Yeah. How has this relationship between the two of you changed in terms of writing? Is it still, I mean, obviously you're a lot older, you've grown out of those early years.
I'll answer that. I do everything now. On airplane, even fine.
Exactly. I don't think it's really changed at all.
I would say absolutely nothing has changed whatsoever.
Yeah.
Except you guys will pay for valet parking now.
Exactly.
You won't drive down the block to save the
we got good office chairs.
Yeah, we got two good office chairs. That's it.
And one of those foot pedal things.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, those are good.
And with writing The Green Hornet, have you read Kevin Smith's draft? Did they show it to you at all?
No, I'm actually friends with Kevin Smith, and he said... I probably could read it if I want. I don't want to.
I say we read it after we finish our first draft.
Yeah, exactly. I have no interest right now in reading it, I would say. At some point...
I don't want to see some awesome idea that I can't use.
Exactly. I'm just afraid of that.
You guys were growing up in Vancouver. Did you go to a lot of movies? I mean, you were writing a script, but were you a movie fan?
Yeah, huge movie fan. I mean, you have to be doing something when you're not getting laid, so watching movies seemed to be a pretty good activity.
Like when we were really young, I'm assuming you did the same as me, there was this rental store where you could go and get 7 movies for 7 days.
Yeah.
Everyone would go there, get 7 old movies, watch them all weekend.
Well, as obsessive fanboys yourself, do you find that Green Hornet is a superhero that people might not be as obsessive over as, like, Spider-Man?
They're sure pretending to be obsessive.
They're really acting like they are, but, I mean, the part of our reason for, you know, gravitating towards that is because, I mean, I bet a lot of guys who read Either Cool News know who the Green Hornet is, but, like, my girlfriend has literally never heard of it. So
it's also cool because, like, you know, they make the X-Men, and I've been reading X-Men since I was a kid.
I'm judging it, watching every moment.
Exactly.
None of you know anything about the Greek.
Exactly. So we could completely destroy it and no one will complain. Yeah, I mean, it's nice having a character to work with that isn't as well known, just because, I mean, we don't plan on changing it, but it's just nice because a lot of people don't have a lot invested in it, I don't think.
Are you writing it with a budget in mind?
$500 billion. That's just my salary. I don't even... That's big. Roughly far bigger than we're comfortable with.
Anyway, I think we're going to try to convince them to give
Yeah, we keep acting like... And we don't need that much.
What are you playing in Spider with?
I play a hobgoblin named Hogsqueal. It feels as silly to say that as it sounds.
Is it a makeup intensive role?
No, it's a nothing intensive role. I went into a recording studio and over the course of 6 hours recorded every line I have in the entire movie. Yeah.
So I have to ask you, Seth, when you finally presented the script to Judd, I mean, how did you know it was the right time, and had you already been talking to him about it beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, we just gave it to him. I mean, there was no, probably...
There was no we.
Unwisely. Yeah, I just gave it to him. I thought it was the right time because it was done, and it had been done for a while. We kept rewriting it, but, I mean, I'd just show it to anybody who would read it. I mean, I had really no shame about it. I thought it was funny, and it was a little embarrassing, definitely, but I was just excited for people to read it.
Well, at the time we were doing this TV show, Undeclared, and Seth was one of the stars and a writer, and I kept noticing that Seth's scripts were, you know, among the best scripts that anybody was writing on the show, even though he was 18. So when he said he had a screenplay, obviously I was pumped about it, and it was hysterical. The first rough that I read was a riot. And there was certainly work to be done, but there was a real comic voice there that's still in the movie. That sense of humor never changed. We just tried to deepen it and have it make more sense.
Yeah.
And so it was exciting. We did a table read back then where Seth read the part of Seth, and Jason Segel read Evan, and Greg Mottola was there because he was directing episodes of Undeclared, and we had the cast of Undeclared read it, and we still have the tape of it, and it was really funny then. We just couldn't convince anyone to make it because no one wanted to make R-rated comedies starring unknown teens. And but Seth kept saying to me, this is the kind of movie me and my friends wish somebody would make. And I always believed that he was right, and that if a movie was really uncensored, it potentially could break through in a big way. So we're about to find out.
Could you put that tape on the DVD?
Yeah, sure. If Jason Segel will sign the release.
I know, bastard.
But we also had Kyle Gass and David Krumholtz.
Yeah, Kyle Gass and David Krumholtz were the cops.
Yeah.
I think was Charlie Hunnam in it?
Yeah. Charlie Hunnam probably played something. We got close a few times to getting people to make it, but they never thought there was a premise to sell.
Yeah.
And we thought the style a little bit was the premise.
But yeah, that's what we just thought.
But it was kind of killer because they were always excited. They always were pumped about it. But
yeah.
They just didn't have the guts to go through.
So it was almost worse because we kept being strung along. Like, the enthusiasm, it gave us hope this whole time, which was at times not valid hope.
The funny thing is, because we couldn't get it made, you know, I said, well, guys, let's write another movie that we think is more commercial. And so I had them write Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
And you told us.
In my head, it was really commercial.
Yeah. You said come up with 100 ideas. We came up with 50 great one-page ideas. Yeah. And he was like, okay, cool, whatever. Write this movie.
Yeah. But what's funny, yeah, it's like...
Where's that list?
Yeah, we want that
list. I got the list.
We, like, when we wrote this and Pineapple Express, which also took around 6-7 years to get made, like, we wrote them with the intention of them being commercial, accessible movies, you know? There was no part of us that was like, this will really piss people off.
Like, we
thought,
not,
like, this is it. This is what everyone wants, you know?
We did not watch indie films.
Yeah.
When we suggested David Gordon Green, I was like, David Gordon who?
Yeah, exactly. If it plays at the Sunset Lemley, I will not go see it. That's my rule of thumb.
Was there... there is a guy that you guys hung around with named Brian Fogel.
Sammy Fogel.
But is that guy, is he the guy in the movie? Or?
Yeah, he'll be down here in 3 days for the premiere.
But when he was, it's kind of based on 13-year-old Fogel. Like, the Seth and Evan characters are based more on, like, 18-year-old Seth and Evan, but the Fogel's based more on 13-year-old Fogel, which is why we cast someone who is physically a lot smaller than the other guys. Because in our heads, he was actually 5 years younger than the other guys.
I just want to add before we stop. You know, the thing that's exciting about this movie is, you know, having have the luck to get Greg Mottola to direct it.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, Greg Mottola really shot a beautiful movie that I think is very heartfelt. And underneath all the dirtiness and bravado, it's actually a very sweet story about these guys panicking because high school is ending and they're not going to be able to be around each other anymore. And I just feel like Mottola took this to a completely different level, which is exactly what I had hoped.
Yeah,
is that if you hired someone who was way out of our league, that he would morph what he does with us and come up with something that's actually meaningful. And so I'm most excited that, you know, when the movie ends, people cry, and it's actually in addition to how raucous and disgusting as it at times, I actually think it's a sweet story that people are really connecting with.
Can you talk about coming up with the fake alcohol names?
That's not something we can totally take credit for.
No, there was a guy, actually the guy who plays the bartender at Bailey's is the guy who was charged with, every bottle of alcohol you see in the movie is fake.
What's his nickname?
And in the liquor store, there's literally thousands of fake bottles of alcohol because no actual alcohol would clear their name for usage. So, I mean,
the best one is there's one.
There was Pabst Smear gin. That was the one that really made us laugh. And there was Trotsky's vodka. The pit picture of Trotsky on it.
I really like the main one, Binion's. I think that sounds real.
Yeah, Binion's beer.
And Old Milwaukee.
Yeah, or Old Muskogee.
Old Muskogee.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was the guy. I honestly can't remember his name.
He has a nickname, Doctor.
Doctor Label Dr. or something.
Bottle.
I can't remember, but there was the guy who plays the bartender.
Apparently,
guy.
He's the be all end all. If you're getting
of
anyone
coming up with fake labels,
fake
yeah.
Can I ask you guys who you think the audience is for this film? Because it is, you mentioned it's an R-rated comedy.
Single mothers.
Yeah. The Hairspray crowd.
Exactly. Yeah.
How does it feel to go? You've seen this movie how many times?
30, 40.
Is every time like the laugh so loud that you can't hear the lines following it? Because I haven't seen that in a long time. At the screening I was at, like, you'd miss lines.
Yeah, some lines get swallowed by
my favorite line gets swallowed. Bill Hader has some really funny lines when they're on Seth in the bar.
Yeah, when he's talking about his wife getting caught prostituting.
The biggest reaction of any movie I've ever been a part of. I've never seen anything like it. I resent it on some level. It makes it seem, Knocked Up seem so much less impressive that it's immediately followed by something like this. I wish I was just alone in the valley there. It's really is amazing. I was trying to think of movies that get laughs this big. And it's really have to look at some of the great movies like Airplane and Young Frankenstein. I mean, it's amazingly consistent. And the only word I could use to describe it, because I've seen it with crowds a ton, is every single time the place goes shithouse. it's really, really gratifying to watch this movie play and to see them pull this off. And I'm just proud of the fact that I didn't throw it in a drawer after failing to get it made for so many years.
Exactly.
This is our Gandhi.
It's our Rocky.
You give up on it.
Let's talk about...
Well, you guys have made a couple of movies now and been very successful about geeky guys against all odds and really hot chicks.
Yes.
You think that's just...
We've both accomplished that in real life.
Exactly.
We know it's happened.
Right what you know.
But do you think that's like a perennial thing?
Go watch any Buster Keaton movie. Every single Buster Keaton movie is him being a wimp who winds up with the pretty girl.
Yeah.
So I don't think that we're reinventing the wheel. I think that maybe stylistically it's different.
It's one of the beautiful truths of life, though, I think, that like
women are less vain in that regard. You often will see a beautiful woman with a not-so-handsome man.
Yeah. A goofy guy has to put in more effort, and he will succeed much of the time.
Yeah.
But that effort actually makes us laugh. I mean, there's definitely a fantasy aspect to it. But I think, right, Jake Kasdan was laughing, telling me, we were talking about this one day, and he said, you know, right now there's just millions of guys trying to do just that.
Yeah.
It's kind of rare thing. It's not weird that goofy guys are trying to get pretty women, and most guys are goofy. Probably 90% of men are goofy.
Sorry.
And he said, it's no less weird than a movie starring Cameron Diaz where she has trouble finding a date.
Yeah.
Are we going to see super bad figures?
I hope so.
I pray.
Oh, yeah. We had a good virgin figure.
Yeah, there was a good virgin figure. I want a McLovin.
I want Lego version.
I don't know if you could talk about getting David Gordon Green to do Pineapple Express and what he brought to the process.
It was, but
I was just going to say, you know, his agent kept calling me saying David Gordon Green wants to do comedies, and they sent me all his movies, and I watched them. I'm like, okay. interesting. I guess all the real girls have some funny stuff in it.
Yeah.
But I actually saw this movie called Foot Fist Away that Danny McBride made that's going to come out at some point, and Paramount Vantage is putting it out. And he's so funny. I mean, and he's the star of Pineapple Express, too, with Seth and Franco, that I thought, you know, if these guys think that David Gordon Green is funny and has this move, then I'll take the leap on it.
Yeah, that's what they would say. We met them, we met Danny McBride and Jody Hill, who directed Foot Fist Way, and they just said, like, you know who's funny? You know who you guys would really get along with? David Gordon Green. And we kept thinking, like, these guys are fucking nuts.
Yeah,
I crazy.
I met David before I'd ever seen any of his movies. And when I saw the movie, I just literally thought I'd been lied to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He shows up, he's like, what the fuck's up?
Yeah, you meet him, and he's this weird little squirrely southern guy, and he looks 10
never,
years old.
Never,
yeah.
Ever serious.
And he's always joking. He farts to cut. And, like, and
he
then,
carried a little toy called Le Farture around.
Yeah. And
fart noises the whole movie.
I mean, he's just a weirdo, and we thought, you know, it's a weed action comedy. There's a very bad version of that. We were very aware of that. So, in the Greg Mottola school of director choices, let's choose someone who's way better than the material, and hopefully it will make the material rise to their level, not make them fall to our level.
he brought his stuff, but he also brought a lot of stuff we didn't expect.
Yeah.
All sorts of weird, strange choices.
I mean, it's a very unique, odd, somewhat genre-bending movie, I hope. Yeah. And I think that's largely due to the way he filmed it and directed it.
It's like a modern, violent, demented Abbott and Costello movie.
Yeah.
Did Dr. Label come up with the name for the fake pot?
Yeah. The fake pot?
No, that was...
That was all us. Yeah. Oh, yeah, spell.
they would come up to us with all this, and they'd be like, more purple, less purple, does this look real, does this...
Yeah,
like, there
was, the making of the fake
it
weed.
It was not easy. They went through a huge process.
Yeah.
All right. Guys, thank you.
Thank you, guys.